Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Following is a live copyrighted presentation. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Radio Law Talk with your host, Frederick Penny, attorney at law.
We're back. Second hour, man. This thing flies by. We were talking about Weinstein the first hour.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue with that. So we hate to beat a dead horse, but it gets to the interesting thing of what the jury's doing right now, the questions they're asking the judge, and then we're going to move on from there. We're going to talk about the Bloomberg debate, not about his height, but about that non-disclosure agreements. That's all I hear about is height the whole time. I'm just like, oh, my gosh, really, again? I did see a pretty funny spoof on it the other day, but I was laughing. And then we're going to talk about the latest 5-4 vote on Friday by the Supreme Court.
Again, 5-4, not a reference to Michael Bloomberg's height. Sorry.
He's not 5'4". He's 5'1".
I think he's like 5'3".
I think he's about 5'1". But anyway,
he'd take 5'4 as a compliment. Oh, thank you.
And not only that, but guess what? Not only a compliment. They're going to talk about my weight because I weigh up. I'm pushing 200 pounds now, so it's going to look pretty embarrassing.
Todd weighs 5'4".
Yes, I weigh 5'4".
We're also going to do a case or no case. Call us at 855-LAW-RADIO. Again, 855-LAW-RADIO, or tweet us at Radio Law Talk. I think Twitter has not thrown us off the Twitter page yet. We brought up last week how Twitter suspends us temporarily because we talk about Weinstein. We think it's like just algorithms. Did you know that, Denise? That we found out they were suspending our Twitter account because every time we talk about Weinstein, I guess that there's things that you discuss in there that it automatically throws the algorithm off and they got to review it. And then it comes back on. Twitter puts us back up. Because remember, we're politically neutral.
Yeah.
We don't take one side or the other. And we love to talk about the law. Remember, these are all allegations, innocent until proven guilty. We are only talking about general topics of law. Do not quote us to any court of law and go seek local counsel. Because you know what? The only time we allow you as the host. There's only one time, Denise, right, that we allow them to use us. And where is that, Denise, that we allow them to use Radio Law Talk?
Well, I think there's two, around the water cooler and then around the dinner table.
With who?
With your in-laws.
In-laws, that's exactly right. That's the best time to say what, Todd? When they say what? When
well,
the in-laws?
You know, they say that back in '02, the court did, you can come back and say, well, I'll see your they say, because we don't know who they are, and I'll tell you what Radio Law Talk said. And then somebody will say, well, did Todd say it? Yeah, because if Todd said it, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. Did Denise say it? Yeah. Okay, we'll listen. Did Fred
exactly
say
right.
it? Did Fred say it? Maybe. Did Cal say it? Well, he's probably the smartest one of the bunch, but he doesn't have a degree.
Smartest Alec of, yeah. Alec of the bunch.
www.radiolawtalk.com. You can read our disclaimers and enjoy them. So before we get to anything else, the most important thing people are here to listen to is case or no case. Roll it, Cal.
All right, here we go.
Now it's time to play case or no case.
Yay!
Interesting story about a sorted chapter in American history. I take it out of Mississippi. For a gentleman by the name of Ranjan Barta was watching the Spielberg movie, about Abraham Lincoln, trying to pass the 13th Amendment in the final months before his life was stolen by John Wilkes Booth. By 1865, three quarters of the American states had ratified, but there were four holdouts. Among them, surprisingly, Texas. I say surprisingly because I didn't know this, just to me. Texas was a holdout on slavery. Mississippi finally ratified the 13th Amendment in 1995, and yet Mississippi was still a slave state. And you ask, how was that possible? And Mr. Barta asked how that was possible. So he decided to seek counsel and find a legal remedy to help make Mississippi get up with the times when it came to slavery. And so I'm going to ask you, Denise, you went first last time. Mr. Penny Dealers left. Case or no case?
So, again, let me make sure I'm clear with this. After the 13th Amendment, Texas and Mississippi were the holdout.
There were four
total, but those were the two most latest ones.
Latest ones, right. And the individual brought a lawsuit for what now?
to get the ratification that the legislature in Mississippi had provided to make it to get it so
to
that
make
they
it so they'd ratify
right.
the 13th Amendment.
Because Mississippi, apparently, they passed it, but the Mississippi legislature wouldn't ratify it, right?
Incomplete ratification process,
gotcha.
Correct.
Okay.
The legislature has to ratify it.
Yes,
it's like
when
you became a state, you had to ratify the Constitution. And
would that start with an R? Or
I think it's ratify with a T.
With a Q.
With a Q. Not like you'll ratify like the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm going to ratify.
I totally ratified that. It was awesome.
I thought it was like a rap song or something. I was a little confused there.
That would be rapify.
Or radish.
Rapify. It's rapify. Different thing.
Yeah. Rapify. Okay, rapify. I'm stalling because I have absolutely no idea what the answer is, and I have no legal discussion. So I'm going to say no case, just because I have no idea what the answer is.
Okay.
I'm just saying no case. I don't know why.
All right, Mr. Kunin, what say you? Do you say this is a case, or is it just something Cal decided to make up?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if this was a case. So I'll say it's a case, and I'll say that ultimately it was ratified, but I'll explain why this would happen. Because if you recall from our constitutional discussions and from reading the text of the United States Constitution, you will learn that a constitutional amendment, a constitution, can be amended by, it doesn't require a unanimous vote of all the states. It requires, 3/4 of the state legislatures to ratify, and there's got to be at least a 2/3 vote to even propose an amendment. There's a whole bunch of things. Long and short of it is,
2/3 vote in the House and Senate, correct?
Yeah, 2/3 votes in the House and the Senate just to propose the
amendment.
And
then a 3/4 ratification
and then a 3/4
of all the states.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
The salient point there is that it does not require unanimous consent of all the states in order to justify and amend the Constitution. So if Mississippi wanted to hold out, that's fine. The Constitution's still amended. Once that happens, once the Constitution is amended, any law on the books in a state that's contrary to the constitutional amendment become null and void, whether the legislature gets around to withdrawing it or not. So it can technically stay on the books, but it is of no effect. They'd be slapped down harder than you can say howdy if they tried to enforce their legal laws of indentured servitude in that regard. That's how it happens. It probably did. My guess is, I'm going to say it's a case. And ultimately, because this individual took measures to do what he did, they ended up ratifying that amendment in Mississippi.
And after the death of Lincoln, his predecessor probably would not have signed off on this amendment, right? Does a president have to sign off on amendment to the Constitution?
I don't.
He has to sign off on the bill before it goes to Congress. I mean,
I know when it gets back from Congress, he would then sign it or veto.
The veto power of the president only applies to legislation. I don't believe it applies to constitutional amendments.
Okay.
Because the constitutional amendment is a vote of the people. The same people voted to create the Constitution that gave him his power. Ultimately, the people have the power, so I don't think that the president can veto that.
Okay.
And
kind of what I felt, too, but I didn't know. I wanted a second
opinion. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? And it's interesting that something like slavery would still be on the books in states. Now, Texas finally ratified when they became a state in 1875.
Now, before you give too much info, Denise hasn't given us her answer.
I'm just passing that along.
I'm waiting for no case here.
And your answer is yours is a case.
And it was ultimately ratified.
Yeah, okay. Denise, your answer is what?
Yeah, but he brought a case to sue who?
He took measures to make sure that the ratification took place. I don't know that he would have standing to sue anybody, but what he did ended up leading to the amendment being ratified by the Mississippi legislature.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I'm glad we had this discussion because you gave me more time to think about my answer, because what I think is that I think that Cal has been reading history books, and he's been having a lot of fun reading a history book. when we come back.
Oh, come on.
All right, we'll be back. Let Cal take us out. We're going to case or no case with Denise's answer when we come back.
It's a fascinating story, and it's not in the dustbin of history. It was forefront, at least for this guy, who saw a Steven Spielberg movie and said, what about us? At least that's what I'm alleging. So the answer is coming up to case or no case very shortly. Don't go away.
All advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
Not all law firms have extensive experience in all areas of the law. It's wise to look for firms that have knowledge and understanding in your particular area of concern. So go to ProLawFirms.com. They have listings of attorneys in key areas of practice, such as family law, estate planning, personal injury, bankruptcy, and so forth. When you're looking for a lawyer that has extensive experience in your particular area of need, go to ProLawFirms.com. That's ProLawFirms.com.
ProLawFirms.com is not a law firm and does not endorse or recommend any specific law firm.
Jason Ross back here with Fred Penny, managing attorney from Penny and Associates Injury Lawyers. Now, Fred, what type of cases are you dealing with now, and what sets you apart?
Jason, we help people with all types of personal injury cases. We're former insurance company trial lawyers. We understand the other side, which gives us a distinct advantage over our competition. Remember, we don't get paid unless we win.
That's Penny and Associates Injury Lawyers with locations throughout California. For a free consultation, go to PennyLawyers.com or give them a call, 1-800-616-4LAW. That's PennyLawyers.com.
This is Denise Dirks. We can represent clients in divorce, legal separation, child and spousal support, custody, termination of parental rights, step-parent adoptions, guardianships, and even conservatorship matters. Call 1-877-886-7186 for a consultation.
The law offices of Denise L. Dirks provide family law services in Northern California. When the law affects your family, call 877-886-7186. The family of attorneys at Denise L. Dirks is here to help.
Hi, I'm Frederick Penny of Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers. I bet you're tired of hearing lawyer commercials. So just relax and listen to music for a few seconds. When you or a family member has been injured, call 800-616-4LAW or see us at PennyAndAssociates.com.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-976-1460. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-976-1460. That's 1-800-976-1460. 1-800-976-1460.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
Do, 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 do. You're listening to RadioLawTalk.com. And now back to your host, Frederick Penny.
All right. Tell us, Denise, what's your thoughts? You've waited long enough.
Okay. So I believe that Barta filed a declaratory relief action to determine that the Mississippi slavery legislation was unconstitutional and that he wins. Does that make sense?
That was totally intelligent.
With the net result of what?
That he wins. That the it is determined that slavery is unconstitutional.
They ratified it.
No, and then the legislature wanted to stop the embarrassment and ratified.
Well, just make sure. Cal, were you saying ratification or certification?
Well, the amendment was already ratified, but when you hear answer,
right.
You'll know the question.
Okay.
When you hear the answer, when you answer, you'll understand. So, Denise, you're saying case, and he wins.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give you that. So, those of you who say it is a case, and like I said, I was stunned to learn this when I started reading, the answer is yes, it was a case.
Thank you. In other words,
that's what happened. Okay? And fascinatingly enough, we don't need to editorialize about the practice of slavery. The practice ended as a practical matter of federal law when the 13th Amendment was passed December 6th of 1865. Mississippi had said, yeah, we ratified that amendment in a largely symbolic gesture in 1995 because the law was already a federal law. But they did not send along the certification of the ratification to the federal government, which says a lot about the sentiment at that time, at least with that one official, even in the late 1900s, right? Interesting to think about.
So it's 95, right?
1995,
wow.
Right? So the federal government finally, it's the people at the office that publishes the Federal Register. You have to send the ratification to the Federal Register, certified by the governor, signed off by everybody. And then once they post the law, then it's the law. And that finally happened in Mississippi. I'll see if I can find my dates here without messing it up. Well, anyway, it finally happened in Mississippi after this happened in 1995. It was 2002 or something like that. I mean, it was, fairly recently anyway.
Well, if the movie Lincoln by Spielberg was what springboarded it, it would have had to have been like 2012, 2013.
Yeah,
because that's when that movie came out.
Right. So I'm just trying to. I did not double check my dates, but at any rate, they got the paperwork together, sent it to the Office of Federal Register. The office ratified the results. The year 2013.
Wow.
It is now officially illegal to own states slaves in all 50 states by state ratification, not just by federal law. It was the date fascinated me. It was unclear why it took so long, but Dick Mulfus, the Secretary of State, said, "What an issue to have a filing error on," right?
Wow.
And so that, ladies and gentlemen.
So did Barta file a suit?
No. He just got a guy to help him, sort of make him phone calls and say, "Hey, what's the deal?"
Well, then there was no case.
No, it
was a lawsuit filed.
No lawsuit was filed.
Well, then I win. I am the winner. There was no case filed. There was no lawsuit.
Cal is the historically Cal.
You've got it right. I'm going to award the points based on the fact that the amendment.
Wait a minute! I said there was no case.
I'll give you points too.
Thank you.
But it doesn't matter. You know why?
That is only fair.
It doesn't matter. You know why? Because as of next hour, we're resetting because Todd Kuenin has won this round of case or no case with 53 points.
Oh, Todd!
And I don't even know what the points count.
Todd wins.
Well, I can tell you. I'd be glad to tell you. Todd had 55, Fred had 46, and Denise now had, you had 26 plus the times you were gone, 28.
I was 30.
She had about 30 or 32 points.
But here's the point. So, ladies and gentlemen, you don't understand why we're talking numbers. What happens in case or no case is the first one to 50 points becomes the winner, and the other two hosts must buy dinner for that host. So Todd Kuenin, Denise and I have to take you to dinner at his choice. And by the way, the last time I won, 100 was it $125 a plate?
It was about $125 a plate, yeah.
$125 a plate, and I enjoyed every bit of it. Now,
and,
unfortunately...
And the good news is these folks are not competitive in the least.
No!
What's best for these two is that I'm a cheap date.
Well, you're a McDonald's guy. I know that.
No, the good thing is that each one of us has won one time.
Well, here's the negative thing, though. No, I won
twice. Oh, you won twice.
I tell you, here's the negative part. I guess we didn't really say the full details. I can see Todd going, no, I'd like to have dinner at Spooner's in Spooner's in Monterey, California. Whoa!
That's giving me some excellent ideas there, Mr. Penny. Thank you very much for the suggestion.
So the third hour, we will be playing Case or No Case again.
Yep.
And Cal, it's about?
The third hour is Case or No Case. Let me look. Where is it?
That's
here.
Okay.
Okay. Wait. Hold on. A guy who decided it was appropriate to sue his lawyer from Southwestern Idaho.
Okay.
Decided I need to sue my lawyer.
All right. We're going to finish up on some Weinstein here this hour really quick. Those of you who haven't followed us the second hour, it's the deliberations right now of the jury. They asked a few questions that we want to go over, and I'm going to go over really quick the eight main questions they asked. I'm just going to read them. The first question is, what's the legal they want to know the legal definition of the term consent and forcible compulsion. The second thing they asked is that they wanted the blueprint of Weinstein's Soho, that's in New York, his Soho apartment, where Haley says that Weinstein forced things on her. Fourth, they wanted to understand the statute of limitations as it relates to Scoria's rape claim in 1993. They also wanted reread and re-explain the first two charges. They also asked for emails between Haley and Weinstein. These are the individuals, claiming, and the length of the conversation. And they asked also Wednesday afternoon, the jurors asked to be read the actress Rosie Perez's testimony, which she told jurors that Scoria told her about the rape. And then finally, all written in digital communications mentioning Scoria, including the emails pertaining to private investigators tasked with keeping tabs on her. This is crazy. This is crazy. We're going to be back and talk a little more about it, then jump into some more interesting things.
Hey, call us at 1-855-LAW-RADIO. That's 529-7234.
Much more things coming up right here on Radio Law Talk. All you have to do is listen on your station or online at RadioLawTalk.com. Thanks for turning us on. We'll be right back.
Advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
Jason Ross back here with Fred Penny, managing attorney from Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers. Now, Fred, what type of cases are you dealing with now, and what sets you apart?
Jason, we help people with all types of personal injury cases. We're former insurance company trial lawyers. We understand the other side, which gives us a distinct advantage over our competition. Remember, we don't get paid unless we win.
That's Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers with locations throughout California. For a free consultation, go to pennylawyers.com or give them a call, 1-800-616-4-LAW. That's PennyLawyers.com.
This is Denise Dirks. We can represent clients in divorce, legal separation, child and spousal support, custody, termination of parental rights, step-parent adoptions, guardianships, and even conservatorship matters. Call 1-877-886-7186 for a consultation.
The law offices of Denise L. Dirks provide family law services in Northern California. When the law affects your family, call 877-886-7186. The family of attorneys at Denise L. Dirks is here to help.
Not all law firms have extensive experience in all areas of the law. It's wise to look for firms that have knowledge and understanding in your particular area of concern. So go to prolawfirms.com. They have listings of attorneys in key areas of practice, such as family law, estate planning, personal injury, bankruptcy, and so forth. When you're looking for a lawyer that has extensive experience in your particular area of need, go to prolawfirms.com. That's prolawfirms.com.
Prolawfirms.com is not a law firm and does not endorse or recommend any specific law firm.
Many women have so many clothes in the closet, but then we go to get dressed and find we have nothing to wear. We've all been there. We all want to be comfortable and fashionable at the same time. And it's difficult to find clothing that makes that task effortless. But at Lenny & Company, you can find trendy, comfortable clothing that is affordable. Things you'll want to wear every day. Shop with a purpose online with free shipping. Just go to LettyandCompany.com. Lenny & Company.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
A temporary truce between the United States and the Taliban took effect, setting the stage for the two sides to sign a peace deal next week aimed at ending 18 years of war in Afghanistan and bringing U.S. troops home. If successfully implemented, the week-long reduction in violence agreement, which is now in force, will be followed by the signing of the peace accord on February 29th, wrapping up America's longest-running conflict and fulfilling one of President Donald Trump's main campaign promises. At least 18 Americans who returned home from a quarantine cruise ship are now infected with the new virus, bringing the number of the cases in the United States to 35. The U.S. tally dates back to January 21st and includes three people who were evacuated from the central China city of Wuhan, where the outbreak began. More than 76,000 cases have been reported worldwide, with the majority in China. This is USA Radio News.
Money! 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 Money. You gotta have it. When you need it, what do you do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Are you curious?
Oh, that's down.
Radio Law Talk. Now back to the show.
So we're beating a dead horse here, which is the Weinstein case. But the jury right now is deliberating. It looks like they're struggling to come back with a verdict. They have a lot of questions. We're going to find out next week what happens. We clearly, as Todd said, this is good for the defense, which you've been on that side. Okay. We're going to find out next week.
It means the defense has done their job. And another thing is that the jury is not just, oh, he's a creep, let's find him guilty and get out of here. They're deliberating, which, regardless of what you think about Harvey Weinstein, you always want a jury to do that regardless of the case.
For a long time, too. It's not
exactly.
Like one day. So just so you know, Bill Cosby's was 2 days.
Yeah.
And it was a total of...
The second trial.
Yeah, the second trial, 14 days. So this is dragging on. So we're going to talk about the Bloomberg debate, the Democratic debate. Now, Bloomberg, for the first time, qualified to be able to debate the rest of the Democrats in the last Democratic. And Todd's laughing because they talk about him being too short, and that's really apparently, and we're politically neutral.
I was just saying, it's
Trump,
nice to have a $1 billion at your disposal.
That's exactly
right.
Well, he bought in, got to the debate, and who fell out? Steyer, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Steyer's
not on.
And so what's interesting, Denise, is that the argument for the big argument for Democrats is you got this rich, powerful guy with billionaire that is, no, I'm talking about Trump, that, and they pound on that. Now Bloomberg's moving in with the same basic credentials, trying to, quote, buy his way in, and there are some real issues there. And he gets up on the Democratic platform and the stand during the debate, and Elizabeth Warren says what, Denise, to him?
Well, she questions him about his non-disclosure agreements with women and his verbal and maybe other types of events involved, and there was non-disclosure agreements involved,
right.
And she challenged him to say, let these women out of their non-disclosure agreements at their decision and let them talk about what happened. Well, and he said there's only three cases.
And describe what a non-disclosure is, before we get into this.
Well, a non-disclosure agreement is where you agree that you're not going to talk to anybody else about the facts in the matter that are being settled, and if somebody does talk about it publicly, then they can be sued,
right,
under the contract, because that's breach of contract.
Right.
And these non-disclosure agreements have been used by multiple people to try to keep bad conduct, whether it's corporate or individual bad conduct.
Even alleged, though. See,
yeah,
a lot
even
of times
alleged.
It's settlement. When there's a settlement, they say, what, Denise? We're not saying we were at fault, but here's a non-disclosure agreement. And usually, Denise, that means they got to pay a little bit more, doesn't that? I mean, even though that's not what you do, but they got to pay sometimes. Look,
yeah, but sometimes the victim, alleged victim,
yes,
doesn't want it to be disclosed
exactly
either.
Exactly right.
So when you come to that kind of a meeting of the minds, that's mutual consent, and that requires mutual consent to get rid of that provision in the contract.
Go ahead, Kevin. We laymen always wonder, well, why would you pay hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars if you didn't do anything wrong? Sometimes it's to avoid the cost and the public embarrassment. But really, you've got to think, if Mr. Bloomberg has three of these,
no,
my layman's brain said there's something under the rug that he, when you sign this paper, it stays under the rug.
Which is wrong, Cal. You know why that's wrong?
Yeah,
I don't know why.
You know why that's wrong? Because
no,
a lot of times people settle because of, you're putting it in, and I'm a judge pro tem, so I'll get in the middle and try to settle cases for the courts because they're overworked. So what that is, Cal, is it's not worth the risk. Let's say, you did X, someone claims you did X and Y, and there's about a 10% chance, Cal, of the jury finding you having done that and paying out big money. Maybe you say, look, I'll pay you 10 cents on the dollar, just to get rid of this thing, just so I don't have to go through it. That's what happens a lot of times, Cal.
I know the time I was sued as a news guy for something I was alleged to have said, we settled for literally pennies, and the reason was just to get something into federal court. Is $250,000
right,
in legal
exactly
fees,
right.
And the insurance company said, we'll put up this small amount and we'll just give them that, they'll go away.
That's a cost of defense. A lot of times is what happens, is you would pay to the other side the cost of defense.
Yeah.
Better to pay them than to risk having to pay your attorneys more. That's kind of the idea behind that.
Right.
But, let's say you're running for public office and you don't want somebody to come out and say something about you, so you get in advance of it, right? And you pay for a non-disclosure agreement, and that's what you do. So Bloomberg had three.
Yes.
That involved women. There were probably other ones for business related, but this was about alleged misconduct of Bloomberg.
I mean, he has money. He's going to be a target.
He's going
to
be a target.
He's going to be a target.
And apparently he used to be kind of callous in his jokes, saying jokes in the employment workplace. And he admitted that one of them involved him saying a joke that was, improper or whatever.
Inappropriate.
Yeah.
Once it was known that Michael Bloomberg was going to be in this debate, and they'd known for a couple weeks, then the news stories started coming out about conduct. One of the things was, it's about a 30-35-page booklet called Quotes of Michael Bloomberg that was promulgated back in the 90s as a joke for something, but it starts out at the front saying, every quote in here is true and accurate. I make no comments about this. And that's where a lot of these allegations and unsavory things attributed to Mr. Bloomberg came from. And rightly so, probably the candidates jumped on it and asked him about this. But
right.
The question I had about non-disclosure agreements. Now, in a case where somebody accuses Mr. Bloomberg of something, if the only evidence was that person's word against Bloomberg's word, and there was no other corroboration from any other witness who was told this or present or anything like that, to me, that doesn't seem like the type of case that would warrant that much of a settlement, because there's no corroboration, you've got nothing. Okay? Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't, but if the case had corroboration with other people, and Bloomberg entered into a non-disclosure agreement with the complaining slash victim, I'm using air quotes, that non-disclosure agreement would not prohibit any of the other witnesses who saw it from talking. Right?
That's right. That's what leads me to believe that they're kind of minor incidences, because he's already said to them, I will release them from the non-disclosure agreements at their choice.
And this makes me think that one of the chief considerations for a non-disclosure agreement is that Bloomberg doesn't want people knowing how much he paid to settle this suit, because he doesn't want to advertise, hey, if you want to quit $250,000, make up an allegation against me. It'll bring it, and I'll enter into an agreement. So, and now you're $250,000 richer, or whatever
exactly.
It is. A chief consideration is just, I don't want people thinking this is a meal ticket. It has nothing to do with the veracity of the allegations.
Right. And again, that's the hazard of being well-to-do in America. All of a sudden, the laser beam is on your bank account from anyone around you who thinks, what can I do to get my hands on that? Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's where we are. And we're going to, last I read is he's saying that he's going to probably release it.
No, he did. He came out and said he did.
Because at the debate, he resisted it. And they were saying, well, you know, I don't know that I don't intend to. And he really resisted it. And I think it caught him off guard that they were going to
talk about it. It totally caught him off guard.
And so when he got back and talked with his advisors, it was like, look, you might not want this information to get out there, but if you want to be president, you're going to have to take this one on the chin.
And they're going to say, look at our sitting president. He hasn't exactly been calculating with things that come out of his mouth. So how much worse or less is it going to be than that? You have a standard already. You're probably going to be fine.
Right.
That would be my theory.
He actually, again, not to get political, he actually has, his argument is a smart argument. I mean, a good argument is he's like,
it's not legally sound.
Well, not just that, but you know what his argument is politically is, nobody, you guys can't beat Trump because he can argue economy, I can do it. I'm a businessman, I'm going to be able to do the same thing. That's his argument about why he should be the Democratic nominee. Kind of a good little twist.
I just wonder, when did Trump become a billionaire? Because it had to be during the time of his presidency.
No, he was a billionaire before.
He's had
so many bankruptcies and stuff.
But he has not.
He had business entities have had bankruptcies, but not him personally.
He's never declared bankruptcy.
I don't believe he's a billionaire.
Okay.
I really don't.
We should probably look it up. We'll find out. Yeah.
Well, we will know when we get the tax returns, right?
He's got more than you and I, right?
However much it is,
absolutely,
I'll take it.
Todd may have more.
I will say, Bloomberg did pick up an interesting endorsement recently. I won't tell you who. All I will say is, go ahead, make my day.
Allegedly, he switched over.
We're going to talk about the recent 5-4 decision by the court about immigration. And Sotomayor is not too happy about it. We'll be back.
Interesting conversation. We are full of them here on Radio Law Talk. You're welcome to join us by picking up the phone and calling us. You can tweet, you can text, you can Facebook, doesn't matter, all over social media, all over your radio, and all over the internet at RadioLawTalk.com. Stay tuned. The show will continue in just a bit.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
I don't even recognize myself anymore.
I'm really worried about him. His addiction. I haven't seen him like this. Ever.
Hey, look, I never wanted to start using. I knew the drill, but I was out of options.
I just want to tell him it's not your fault. There are people out there who can help. People who have felt your pain. They know what you're going through.
This has to stop. I'm losing everything. Everyone.
You've been strong your whole life. You can do this, but you have to reach out for help.
It's time. I can do this.
Addiction is a disease, and diseases need treatment.
Call Quit Drugs 321 now at 800-377-1456. 800-377-1456. That's 800-377-1456. Paid for by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
As well.
Time to get back to Radio Law Talk on RadioLawTalk.com and on your favorite radio station.
So there's a policy within the United States that discusses as follows about immigration. And the U.S. government is claiming they have the legal right to deny immigration in the United States of people who might require or have required in the past public financial assistance, and that's what they're able to ask them. The new policy basically says, among other things, to legal immigrants coming in, they ask the question: have you ever used food stamps? Been hospitalized for long-term care? Has the government had to take care of you or cover you through taxpayer dollars? And or I think it even gets into, you know, do you have a job? What's the situation? So what lower courts have done is they're putting injunctions on that. And that's what happened in Illinois, is there an injunction. And that's what everyone's like, oh, this is about a issue of immigration. Well, it's kind of more about the issue of lower courts deciding a whole national issue out of Illinois. And that's kind of what, Todd, you brought up with the way you thought about it.
Exactly. So what we've seen happening recently, and Justice Thomas on the Supreme Court was the first to really talk about this concern, and I believe he raised it in an opinion, his concern about the practice of a lower court, a federal court, issuing an injunction based upon a belief that the party in an appeal will ultimately prevail. So it hasn't been decided on the merits yet, but right, because we think they're going to win, we'll issue an injunction that will stop a practice altogether. And Justice Thomas has expressed the concern that that practice has picked up a lot of steam in the last decade and a half, and that at some point the U.S. Supreme Court's going to have to address the propriety of lower courts doing that. In this case here, there was a challenge to this immigration law, and that case has not been decided yet. It's still making its way through the courts. But a lower court determined that the likelihood that the law as passed, as enforced, would be struck down was so high, they said, we can issue the injunction now.
Right. They don't just look at the whether or not the likelihood of success. They also have to look at irreparable injury. Well, so if the argument on the side of the immigrants is that if they have to disclose that they have received food stamps, for example, or living in a projects, for example, then they're disclosing something that's going to automatically make it so they cannot immigrate here. They're going to be,
it's not automatic. No, it's something that's discretionary, but it's something they take into consideration. That's the issue. They don't want them to ask it. But what the whole point comes, I'm not trying to disagree with you, but the issue is really not the Supreme Court, the majority basically said, yes, that's kind of an issue, but the real issue here is stop doing injunctions, lower court. That's not your job. I know you can do it at times. Knock it off. Just let it go through the system. That's the big argument here.
The Supreme Court wants to see how the society reacts to it and the implications of it and, you know, all of that. But I'm just was arguing what they argued at the trial court level for the injunction. They had to argue some kind of irreparable injury.
Right. That's true. But, you know, the opposite is also true, that if the court issues an injunction sometimes and the case ultimately wouldn't have merit, well, then there's a lot of damage and sometimes irreparable damage to the law that was being imposed or that sought to being enforced at a certain time if the court put the brakes on it and said, no, that cannot happen. Now, sometimes that happens in other cases where timing is of the essence, but that is a problem with the preliminary injunction process, is that one party or the other is going to be harmed by this if it doesn't turn out the way they think. If the case is ultimately lost at trial or in the appeals process, then the party that was prohibited from doing something has been denied the ability to do that for quite a while. And the converse is true as well.
But we have to make sure that this is not legislation. This is not a law. This is a policy that is coming out of some, you know, department.
Well, it's
an application of that policy.
It's a hybrid.
Yes, the policy's already there and has been used for years. They made it bigger. They expanded it.
Exactly. There's a law that says what can and can't happen as far as immigration is concerned. The policy is, well, how strictly are we going to enforce that? And most of the stuff that we have seen here has been the one administration's desire to start enforcing something that up to that point hadn't been strictly enforced.
Right.
And so then when it starts to be enforced, that's when people can then look at the constitutionality of the law. It never came up before because you guys weren't enforcing it. But now that you're going to enforce it, let's see if it's constitutional.
Cal. I'm fascinated by the fact that it's in the law, and then someone starts to enforce it, and now a judge is being said, do you think this was the intent of the people who wrote the law? But it's in the law.
But it's not a law.
Well, law that empowers the agency to make the rules.
It's a policy.
Okay, I'm saying, but the agency is empowered by the law to make the policy and make the rules. That's what confuses me so much as an outsider is, okay, is it legal for them to do that or not?
Well, this raises a separate concern that other people have, and I have the same concern as well. We expect that our legislature is going to pass the laws, okay? That they are going to pass a law, and that if a law is passed, you know, the details of that law have been vetted with the legislature. It's come out. They've made it. It's gone to the president's desk. After passing both houses, the president signed off on it. But what has really taken place, especially over the last 40, 50 years, is this practice of the legislature will say, well, this agency has created, these are the guidelines, and we're authorizing them to come up with their own rules and regulations to promulgate it, and they're essentially passing the buck onto the agency.
It's like a delegation of authority.
And people are coming back complaining, saying, well, if they're making decisions that are going to affect my liberty, due process and all that, how is that passing muster with the requirement that the law be passed by the House and signed by the president? So it's going to come to a head here.
Yeah.
Unelected
really
officials making law, in effect, right? And this happened under Obamacare. It's happened now. And these have always been challenged. So
Obamacare was a law that was enacted.
But I'm saying HHS made a lot of the rules for Obamacare. And that was one of the things that was challenged about this. That's another time this has come up.
But everybody, every administration can actually change the policy. So that means they can interpret that law in different ways. And so that's where a lot
855 Law Radio, if you want to comment, 855 Law Radio. What's interesting is I'm reading there's a lot of different reports about this. I mean, it's funny to read their spin on it. Well, first of all, the thing that I want to say, Sotomayor, whether you are left, right, or middle, is clearly hammering on the majority, saying you're pandering to Trump. I mean, that's what she's saying in between. You are, every time they run to you guys, us, you know, you're allowing, you know, them to go ahead and bring something, and we discuss it and rule on it. And she kind of hammers them on it. But what's interesting, a lot of people keep saying, the five conservatives on the bench, and yet the four progressives, they won't call them liberals, they call them progressives. I think it's funny how they say, the five conservatives the four progressives. No, the four liberals and the five conservatives.
They're not liberals, though. They're moderates. I don't think that you can...
You're definite.
That's why they're parsing their words.
Yeah. They're parsing their words. Yeah. My point is, okay, then maybe the conservatives are progressive. You know, my point is the semantics and the words that the media is using out there cracks me up. It just depends. But it depends which side's using them, Denise. That's what I'm saying. But you know, some say, oh, they're progressive. No, some say they're liberal, and some say that they are conservatives or conservative. No, they're more progressive. So I'm not saying which side is which. It's just interesting the words that everybody starts using.
The biggest concern I have with the dissent that Sotomayor wrote is, again, this is a case that's still working its way through the appellate courts and hasn't reached the Supreme Court on its merits yet. This is just about the preliminary injunction, but her opinion talks a lot about the merits of the underlying case. And my question is, have you already made up your mind how you're going to rule on the case when it gets to you based upon this opinion? And if so, should you recuse yourself when it finally does get here? That's the question that she's going to have to answer at some point in the future.
Hour number three, we're going to talk about Roger Stone very briefly. And who's paying a $113 million bill to Michigan in a lawsuit? And also, psychiatric testing. There was a new, I'm not going to say a poll, but a test study that came out by ASU and USC about psychiatric tests in a courtroom and whether or not they're valid. We're going to talk about that third hour. Join us. We'll be back.
$113 million and you thought your water bill was high. We'll talk about that next hour right here on Radio Law Talk. So don't go away.
You have been listening to RadioLawTalk.com. a copyrighted presentation of Radio Law Talk Incorporated.
The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on, so it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.